Okay, Erev Tov, everybody. A pleasure to welcome you and Rabbi Eitan Avner back. He was here a little while ago. So that's already a good sign. We invited him back. Rabbi Avner received smicha from YU, Yeshiva University Reitz, and the Chief Rabbin of Israel. He has the Rav Ha'ir, which is a sort of a more advanced you know, smicha, which he got while he was in Toronto. He flew back to take the exams in Israel. He has a degree in applied physics and medical engineering from Jerusalem College of Technology, Machon Lev, I think, where he went to school with my nephew, and they served as madrichim, I believe, together. And he is now a shliach working at the B'nai Akiva schools here in Toronto, Director of Judaic Advancement. That sounds like a fancy title, and Israel Guidance. And it's a pleasure to welcome Rabbi Avner, who, Baruch Hashem, we live just a few blocks apart from each other, and we have see each other on a regular basis. So it's nice to have you here online live. Bakasha, Rabbi Avner.
Okay, thank you, Rabbi Kelman. It's a pleasure. Pleasure to be back. Do I have share screen option? I do. Look at that. Okay. Wonderful. So Parshat Re'eh is really jam packed. And something that you notice already at the very beginning is this phrase that repeats itself many, many times. The first time it actually appears in the Torah is here in our Parsha. And that is Hamakom Asher Yevchar Hashem. Right, talking about different times, it's talking either about the place of the Beit HaMikdash or Yerushalayim in general, depending on context. But the interesting thing is that throughout the Torah, it doesn't say Yerushalayim once. Right? The first time Yerushalayim appears by name is really in the beginning of Yehoshua, but in the five books of Moses, it doesn't say Yerushalayim. It just says, Amakom Asher Yevchar Hashem, the place that Hashem will choose. Altogether, it only appears in Devarim, starts first time in Parshat Re'eh. Altogether, it appears 21 or 22 times, I believe. And 16 of those times, Amakom Asher Yevchar Hashem is in our Parsha, Parshat Re'eh. And the question begs to be asked, like, what's the secret? Why don't you just tell us Jerusalem? Why don't you just tell us Yerushalayim? Why this code word of or code phrase of the place that Hashem will choose? You know, it's kind of like you know, if my kids ask me something, I'll give them something ambiguous if I don't really know the answer. Like, Hashem did not know the answer of Yerushalayim. What's with the mystery here? So what I wanted to do tonight is to begin with exploring that. We'll see some approaches. Some of them might be a little bit, not down the beaten path, maybe a little surprising. And from there, I think we're going to open up a little bit of Pandora's box to other areas or paradigms of how to look at different stories in Tanakh. And that'll bring us back to really how to view our role in this world today. So let's deal with that. Our first question is, why is Jerusalem not named as Jerusalem? Rather, it's just the Makom Asher Yevchar Hashem, as we see in this week's Parsha many, many times. So the Rambam deals with this. He's not the first. He's not the last. But he gives one of the more famous answers. He gives three answers in the guide to the perplexed. So the Rambam starts off in source number two. We'll read it in English. There is no doubt by me that the place which was designated by Avram by prophecy, namely talking about Har Moriah, was known by Moshe Rabbeinu and by the multitudes. Namely, we're already familiar with the place of Yerushalayim, right? It appears in Bereishit, it appears in Parshat Vayera with the binding of Yitzchak. So what the Rambam sets out first, and he's saying, everybody knows, we know that this was a known place. Okay, so why doesn't the Torah tell us that Yerushalayim is that place? So the reason the Torah does not mention it by name, rather just hints to it as the place which Hashem will choose, is threefold. The first is that the nations of the world will not conquer or fight over it when they become aware that it is a place on earth that is the purpose of the Torah. Namely, if you let the cat out of the bag and you let the nations of the world know that Yerushalayim is the holiest place in the world, that is the Makom Asher Yevchar Hashem. So they're going to go ahead and they're going to fight for it. They're going to say it's their holy city. They're going to say their prophet went there. They're going to build their temples there. And we don't have to look back at history and say, you know, the Rambam was right. This is exactly what happened. His second answer is that it should not be destroyed and brought to waste by the hands of those who control it. Here too, the goyim will come, the non-Jews will come, and they will try to destroy it, ransack it, because they know how important it is to us. And lo and behold, you don't have to look too far back in history to see that this was also a reality. The first two answers deal with the secret of Jerusalem not being let out because of the nations of the world. The third one kind of focuses towards Am Yisrael, and that's really where I want to go. The third, which is the strongest of them all, is that every tribe of Israel will not come and request it be part of their lot and have control over it. This would cause machloket to befall upon it, just as machloket fell upon the priesthood, as we see from Parshat Korach. For this reason, the commandment to build the Beit HaBechira is only after the rising of the king, as he will be commanded to build it and remove machloket from upon it. So the Rambam says in his third answer that if Am Yisrael knows about it, if the Shvatim know about Yerushalayim being the Makom Asher Yivchar Hashem, the place that Hashem chose, so they're going to fight out amongst themselves. There's going to be a civil war to try to make it in their portion of Eretz Yisrael. What's interesting here is that the Rambam is alluding to his opinion that even Am Yisrael themselves didn't know that Makom Asher Yivchar Hashem is Jerusalem. Right, one could have argued, they said, everybody knew that was the place, it was Yerushalayim, right? But the Torah doesn't want to refer to it as Makom Asher Yivchar Hashem. He doesn't want to call it by name Jerusalem for reasons X, Y, and Z. But the Rambam is stating, no, nobody even knew that it was Jerusalem in the first place. Lest there be machloket and they fight for it. What the Rambam says in this last part about the command to build the Beit the Bechira, to build the Beit HaMikdash only after a king. So this is actually a machloket in the Gemara about what the order is in terms of when we enter Eretz Yisrael. Do we first appoint a king? Do we first fight a Amalek? Do we first build the Beit HaMikdash? So the Rambam says that the appointment of a king has to be first before the building of the Beit HaMikdash, because you need a king who can unify Am Yisrael to go ahead and take Yerushalayim and build a Beit HaMikdash. If you didn't have a king, then it would just be tribes, the different Shvatim, fighting over it. Okay, so let's focus in on this idea for the Rambam that Yerushalayim is supposed to be a place of unity and not a place of machloket. Had Am Yisrael known about Jerusalem being the place that Hashem chooses, so there would have been machloket. But even before that, we also see, this is not only the Rambam says it, Rabbeinu Bachaya also holds this same opinion of the Rambam in terms of the fact that nobody knew that Yerushalayim was Yerushalayim. Rabbeinu Bachaya in source number 3, and therefore this, he says, the Torah was ambiguous and only wrote this, namely, HaMakom Asher Yivchar Hashem, and did not publicize it, the name of the city. And there's no need to say that the nations of the world did not know it was Jerusalem, for even the nations of Israel did not know. For even though all knew the greatness of Mount Moriah, they did not know that this, it was the place that Hashem will choose. We see various places in the Gemara where it connects this idea of unity to Yerushalayim. In Baba Kama 82b, the Gemara says, "Asar dvarim nemru b'Yerushalayim." 10 things were said about Yerushalayim. About one of them being Yerushalayim, lo nechalka l'shvatim. Yerushalayim was not divided amongst the tribes. Right? It was kind of almost in no man's land. Same idea here that it shouldn't be a place of strife. It shouldn't be a place of machloket. But not only in terms of where it belongs, we even see that in terms of the name. The Yalkut Shimoni points out in source number 5, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Avram kara to Yireh, right? We know that Avram called the place Yireh, as we see in source number 7, just bringing the pasuk that the Midrash was referring to. Vayikra Avram shema makom ahu Adonai Yireh, Asher yamar hayom bahar Adonai Yireh. So Avram calls Mount Moriah, he calls it Yireh. And Shem calls it, back in source number 5, Shalem. And as is written, Malki Tzedek, king of Shalem, that's source number 6. Malki Tzedek, melech Shalem, hu tzi lechem beyayim, hu koin le'el elyon. Rabbi Kelvin, this is for your shir from Shabbat. You mentioned this pasuk. Right, so it's called Shalem. So Hashem he's in a tight place. He's in like a Chinese finger trap, right? What are you going to do? Avram calls it Yireh, and Shem calls it Shalem. So the Holy One said, if I call the place Yireh, as Avram called it, then Shem, a righteous man, will be offended. If I call it Shalem, then Avram, a righteous man, will be offended. So I shall call it Yerushalayim, as both of them call it Yerushalayim, he shall see peace. Yir'eh shalom, right? It will be he will see peace in that place. So even in the naming, when we refer to it, the name itself, its essence is all about bringing peace between a diversity, between two different parts. Shalom and Yir'eh, we get Yir'eh shalom, Yerushalayim. But perhaps the unity of Yerushalayim even goes deeper. As David Melech says in Tehillim, this is a beautiful one. Every time I read this Tehillim, I think of my kids reciting it in their Shabbos groups from Yerushalayim. Song of Ascent of David in source number 8, I rejoice when they said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord. Our feet were standing within your gates, O Jerusalem. The built up Jerusalem is like a city that was joined together within itself. Yerushalayim habnuya ki'ir shechubra la yachtav. It is connected, it is joined up together with itself. What exactly does that mean? That it's chubra la yachtav. It's joined together. So there's a really beautiful Malbim who expounds on this. It's worthwhile reading the whole thing inside. The Malbim on this, in source number 9, the Malbim says, a song of ascent of David. This psalm is speaking the praise of Jerusalem. It describes the nation in its totality, as one body made up of different individual limbs, and Jerusalem, a city that was joined together within itself, the individual limbs joined together to become a whole body, which can contain the spirit of life, an intellect, and a godly soul. The house of God is located within her, and it is the vessel which prepares the whole body to receive the divine presence and the godly soul. The city itself is like the heart and the brain within the body, which prepares it to receive the vital force and the intellect. It's a beautiful analogy referring to all of Eretz Yisrael as an organic being, with Yerushalayim being in the center, but in the center not just in terms of a geographical center, but of importance. And like the heart and the brain, it feeds out to the rest of the body. In light of this, it says, I rejoice when they said to me, let us go to the house of the Lord, because there God dwells and he makes the divine presence and godliness to come to rest in holiness. The pasuk in Tehillim goes on, back in source number 8, Shalush shalom Yerushalayim, Yishal'u o'avecha. Request a welfare of Jerusalem. May those who love you enjoy tranquility. To go ahead and be Dori Shalom, to ask the Shalom of Yerushalayim. So in that, the Malbim continues developing this theme a little bit more. Request. It has been explained that Jerusalem is that which upholds the connectivity of the wholeness of the body and its unity. Now it goes on to say that just as if asked about the welfare of the personal body, one would reply that its peace depends on whether its limbs and powers are connected and in peace with each other, because at the moment one divides between them, then death comes. So too, if one asks after the peace of Jerusalem, the answer is that her peace depends on the tranquility of those who love it. The peace of Jerusalem depends on whether there is inner tranquility between those who love her. This is because the primary essence of Jerusalem is the unity of the nation. And if this is so, then if strife and struggle arise between her people and estrangement of hearts occurs, there will be no peace found for the city. Her primary peace is herself with herself, shechavru yachdav, like a city that was joined together within itself, and not if they are divided. There's a difference between peace and tranquility, because peace indicates an external peace and tranquility is an inner tranquility. Thus, the psalm says that through Israel having inner tranquility, which is why it calls them her lovers, because their love is between them, even if they have no peace from their external enemies, this will bring about the external peace of Jerusalem. So the Malbim says this beautiful idea that Yerushalayim is supposed to be this place of unity, the place of unity of the Jews. And if we have unity amongst ourselves, amongst all of the Shvatim, that is the tranquility of Jerusalem, the inner tranquility. And then it will be expressed as shalom to out of Jerusalem, to those who relate to it from outside, to the nations of the world. This idea of the Malbim, he says elsewhere as well, B'bonei Yerushalayim Adonai Yidchei Yisrael Yikanes, the Lord is the builder of Jerusalem, he will gather the outcast of Israel. On that, the Malbim says in source number 11, it is speaking about the ingathering of the tribes and their joining to one another in it. And it is written, The build up Jerusalem is like a city that was joined together within itself, as I explained there. That Yerushalayim really joins everyone together. Now, I mean, Yerushalayim, yes, it joins people together, but I mean, if we look at reality, Yerushalayim sometimes it feels like a place of tension, right? There's lots of, it's a heated place, it's a place where people like to also have machloket. But whenever I see this malbim, when I think about this malbim and I say this pasuk in Tehillim, we say it every day. So it brings me down to back to an experience that I had myself in Yerushalayim. Rabbi Kalman mentioned at the beginning. So I lived in Eretz Yisrael. I'm a shlech here now in Toronto. But I spent many years in Eretz Yisrael. I did college, I did university in Yerushalayim, and I was at a very probably one of the most emotional weddings that I've been to. It wasn't my wedding. I know my father-in-law is here raising the eyebrow, but it wasn't my wedding. My wedding was also great, but it was actually a friend of mine's from Machon Lev, his wedding. It was in the middle of Yerushalayim. It was at the center of Yerushalayim, right near, not far from the center bus station. And it was very unique for the following reason. The Chatan, who I was friends with, so he invited, you know, all his pals from college. And I was at one point during the chuppah where I was looking around and I was just in awe. I was looking at a Chatan, the groom, who his parents made Aliyah. Now, who was his parents? His parents were, one of his parents was Russian. I think his mother was Russian and his father was Taimani. And he's marrying, this guy is now marrying a Bukharian woman. Okay, they're standing under the chuppah. And I'm looking at all of, you know, the chevra, all of us around the chuppah. And you have, you know, me from New Jersey, you have people from Canada, there was a guy from Brazil, there were plenty of people from France, from England, South Africa. You had from all over the world. I mean, I felt like we had more representation there than we did that the UN has. It was amazing to be at that wedding. Really, Ethiopia, we had people from really all over, Argentina, Switzerland, all over. It was amazing, everybody there. It was hard to find two people that were from the same place. It was Ad Kidei Kach. And we're there at a wedding, you know, in our generation, in Yerushalayim. It connected us. And nowhere else in the world can I imagine such a diverse crowd in terms of their origins being in the same place, you know, celebrating together than Yerushalayim. It was a really powerful moment. And that's what Yerushalayim is. That's what all of these sources are saying. It's a place that connects us. And that's why David HaMelech chooses it, right? David HaMelech becomes king. Here we see it, Shmuel Bet. And all the elders of Israel come to the king, to Hebron. And King David enacted a covenant for them in Hebron before the Lord, and they anoint David as king over Israel. 30 years old was David when he became king, and 40 years did he reign. In Hebron, he reigned over Judah 7 years and 6 months, and in Jerusalem, he reigned 33 years over all of Israel and Judah. And the king and his men went to Jerusalem, to the Yebusim, the inhabitants of the land, who spoke to David, saying, "You shall not come here unless you remove the blind and the lame." Okay. And David conquered the stronghold of Zion, which is the city of David. So he becomes king and he goes to Yerushalayim. Why does he go to Yerushalayim? So first, let's see the Radak. The Radak points out something interesting. The Radak points out a discrepancy that we have in here in Shmuel. So that which we have in Divrei Hayamim Chronicles, right? The doc says as such. This is an important point. And the king and his men went. Right? The doc says in source number 13 in the book of Chronicles, it states Vayelech David b'chol Yisrael. Why in Divrei Hayamim it says all of Israel b'chol Yisrael, and here it says in Shmuel it says ve'anshav. So Radak answers, why? For at this moment, all of Israel were his men. And since he was king over all of Israel, he went to Jerusalem to capture the fortress of Zion. It was at this point where he became king. It wasn't just his men, it was Kol Yisrael. They were all united under David. For there was a tradition by them, now they went up to Jerusalem, for there was a tradition by them that Zion was the seat of the kingdom of Israel, and it would not be captured by anyone except for one who is king of all of Israel. And until this day, there was no complete kingship of Israel. For Shaul did not establish his kingship. He wasn't as well as accepted. He didn't have a son who was going to become. So David is the first person who comes and he can go ahead and establish Jerusalem as the Birah, as the capital And they were waiting for this moment. Now, interesting, the Radak assumes that Am Yisrael knew about Jerusalem. Right? They knew Jerusalem was the place, Makom Asher Yivchar Hashem, but they were waiting to go ahead and conquer it because they needed a Melech Al Kol Yisrael. They needed a king who can go ahead and deal all of all Yisrael and to go ahead and unite them before they conquer it. As we saw, the Rambam doesn't agree with that. And we'll see the Malvim and the Ramban, and that'll bring us really to the next stage of this year. The Malvim says, source number 14, and the king and his men went. After this moment, the two kingdoms of Israel were unified. For until now, the tribes of Yehuda was under David, and the rest of the tribes, along with the tribe of Benjamin, were under the rule of Shaul, headed by Ish-Boshet. And now as they all return to the kingdom of David, it was suggested, and it appeared to be the will of Hashem, that the royal city should be on the border of the two tribes, which had a kingdom, and this was in Yerushalayim. Meaning, according to the Malvim, they weren't waiting for a melech in order to go to Yerushalayim because they knew about Yerushalayim. But David went ahead and chose Jerusalem to be the capital, to be the place where he was going to set his kingdom. Why? Because that was the place where you could unite Am Yisrael. That was the place between Binyamin and Yehuda, between where kind of the two kingdoms were. And it can go ahead and, got some writing going on here. It can go ahead and unite them with having the capital in between. That makes it sound like David HaMelech and Am Yisrael didn't know that it was going to be Yerushalayim, and maybe even something more dramatic. And that more dramatic, I think, is one of the most fascinating Rambans on the Torah. One of the reasons it's so incredibly fascinating is because it's a one-liner. This Ramban is actually on next week's Parsha. It's a one-liner. The Ramban is dealing with a problem in the Pasuk. If you're a sensitive a reader, so you'll see the problem in the Pasuk. Pasuk says, Som tasim alach ha-melech, asher yivchar adonai elohecha, bo mikerev ha-checha, tasim alach ha-melech, lo tuchal latet alecha, ish nochri asher lo achichahu. So the Pasuk says, you shall set a king over you, one whom Hashem, your God, chooses from among your brothers. You shall set a king over yourself. You shall not appoint a foreigner over yourself, one who is not your brother. Okay, so you have the commandment here to go ahead and appoint a king. The Ramban says, one second, the pasuk contradicts itself. It says, Som tasim alach ha-melech, you should make a king for yourself, asher yivchar Hashem, that Hashem is going to go ahead and choose. And then it goes ahead and it gives me certain restrictions in terms of my choice, right? It has to, can't be an ish nachri, can't be a foreigner. It has to be someone who's amongst your brothers. So the Ramban says, I don't understand. Which is it? Is Hashem choosing it? Is it the king that Hashem's going to choose? Asher yivchar Hashem? Or is it the Am Yisrael is going to choose it and therefore I need the restrictions? Like, what's going on here? So the Ramban gives a couple answers. His last answer is extremely fascinating. And where he takes it is even more fascinating. The Rambam says as such. V'dati v'derech ha'pshat, he's saying this is the simple understanding. Ki atam asher yivchar, shekol molich al amim meit Elohim hi lo. He says the appointment of a ruler from the nation, that's from Hashem. Right? When it says you shall set a king over you, an outcome that will be must have been a decree from heaven that he would rule. So if a king rules, it's going to be from Hashem. But it's your choice who you choose. Right? Meaning you choose it, and if that person is the one who's elected, that's the one who's chosen by people, then it turns out retroactively, that's what Hashem wanted. Okay, how he deals with it in terms of the king, we'll put that aside for a second. But then he takes it and he extends it to the same language that we're dealing with now in terms of Yerushalayim. L'chein al derech ha-pshat, Hamakom asher yifar Hashem elokecha bo, the place that Hashem chooses, kol sheyivne sham beit hamikdash laHashem, hakol miratzon Hashem. You go ahead and you built the beit hamikdash there. That shows that it was the place that Hashem wanted. This is radical. This is radical. What's the Ramban saying? The Ramban is in essence saying it didn't have to be Yerushalayim. Hamakom asher yifar Hashem means Am Yisrael. You guys go ahead, decide a place where you think it should be. If it's for the right reasons, I'll give you my bracha. Bracha v'atzlacha, it should be there. You want it to be in Yerushalayim? Great. You want it to be in Beit Shemesh, Tel Aviv, Kfar Saba? Also possibilities. Let's not rule those out. Right? There could have been, according to the Ramban, an alternative outcome to where the Beit HaMikdash was going to be. It happens to be that David HaMelech chose it all for the right reasons. He chose it for unity. And the place where the Mekom HaMikdash had to be a place of unity. So he got that right. But there were other possibilities. This is a radical Ramban. This is a radical Ramban that basically, if we boil it down, there could have been another script to this story. You know, when I was a kid, we had those books where you get to the end of a chapter and you can go ahead and ask you a couple questions. If you want this, if you want X to happen, so turn to page this. And if you want Y to happen, you turn to this page. And if you want Z to happen, you turn to this. You can rewrite the story and it's all in one book over and over again, however you want. That's what the Ramban is saying. There were other alternatives to the story of the Torah. So what I want to do with that Ramban is show that it's not just this Ramban. There are other places where we see that this idea of an evolving story, one that we are not just characters in, but in a sense, co-authors. And that brings us to the story of Jacob's exile. There's an interesting Rashi about when Yaakov Avinu returns, from Laban's house. Right? The pasuk says, "Vayishav Yaakov be'eretz megorei aviv be'eretz Canaan." So he comes back to his father's house in Canaan. Even before that, right? Why does he leave? Why does he leave Laban? Right? Why does he leave Haran? So the Rashi there quotes that when Yosef was born, so what happened? Yaakov said, "Oh, it's now time to go back to Eretz Yisrael." Yosef is born. Yosef is the son of Rachel. This, in essence, is fourth generation. It's time to go back. Rashi is not on the source sheet, but what the Rashi was referring to is the Brit Bein HaBetarim. If you look at the Brit Bein HaBetarim, source number 17, so it's very enigmatic and it's a little frightening. We'll read it quickly just to point out what's not in it. So in the Brit Bein HaBetarim that Hashem has with Avram back in Bereshit, and the sun was about to set, a deep sleep fell upon Abram, and a great dark dread descended upon him. And he said to Abram, Hashem says to him, "Know well that your offspring shall be strangers in a land not theirs, and they shall be enslaved and oppressed 400 years. But I will execute judgment on the nation they shall serve, and in the end they shall go free with a great wealth. As for you, you shall go to your fathers in peace. You shall be buried at a ripe old age, and they shall return here in the fourth generation, for the iniquity of the Amorites is not yet complete." Right, so this is basically Hashem's promise to Avram that there's going to be an exile, which we know as what happens in Egypt. Right? The fulfillment of the Brit Bein HaBetarim, we know what's happened to Egypt. We were in Egypt for 210 years, and we came back afterwards to Eretz Yisrael. But what Rashi points out, and we'll see a piece from Rav Soloveitchik about this, that the Brit Bein HaBetarim never says that it's going to be in Egypt. Right? And Yaakov thought, says Rashi, that with the birth of Yosef, this was fourth generation, right? Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov, and then Yosef. Yosef is the fourth generation. Yaakov was outside of Eretz Israel. He was in exile in Haran with Lavan. He was enslaved for 21 years. And now he's coming back. So Yaakov thought that this was a fulfillment of the Brit Bein HaBetarim. And it's over. The exile's over. We can return to Eretz Yisrael. We can establish a kingdom in Eretz Yisrael. It's the end of the story. But what happened? Vayeshev Yaakov meretz gurei aviv veretz Canaan. Yaakov wanted to go ahead and dwell in the land. So Rashi there says, famous Rashi, Bikesh Yaakov, it's actually a midrash, Bikesh Yaakov leyeshev b'shalva. Yaakov wanted to go ahead and rest from all of his hardship. He wanted to go ahead and live the easy life now. He's back in Canaan. But Hashem said, right, Kafat alav Rav Zosha Yosef, but the righteous wish to eat, the Holy One blessed says to them, are you not righteous, satisfied with what is stored upon up for you them in the world to come? And they wish to live in ease in this world too? Right? So the whole story of Yosef jumps up in Yaakov's life, and he doesn't have that shalva, he doesn't have that tranquility which he was looking for. So the interesting question is, was Yaakov wrong? Meaning, according to Rashi, Yaakov thought that the fulfillment of the Brit Ben Avatarim of the exile happened to him, four generations, he comes back with Yosef, and whoops, we go to Egypt, so it didn't happen. So at first glance, it seems that Yaakov was wrong. Miscalculation, Hashem maybe wasn't as clear as he should have been, doesn't say Egypt. But what's fascinating is the parallels that exist between Yaakov's exile and return to Eretz Yisrael to that of Am Yisrael. Right? How long were the Jews in Egypt for? 210 years. How long was Yaakov by Lavan? 21 years, a factor of 10, right? In the Lavan, we know famously from the Haggadah of Pesach, is compared to Paro. Right? Lavan went ahead and Bikesh La'ako, he went to go ahead and uproot us like Paro. They both leave Ruchush Gadol. Right? They both leave with a great wealth, and they come back. So all of these parallels between the two returns of both Yaakov and Am Yisrael lead one to think maybe Yaakov wasn't wrong. In other words, maybe Yaakov could have been right. And that's more or less what Rav Soloveitchik claims. He says it in a couple of places. This is a lecture which was translated here. We won't read it inside, but Rav Soloveitchik's point is that Yaakov wasn't wrong. Yaakov's exile could have been a fulfillment of the Brit Ben Avatarim, but what happened is that things got messed up. In Bereishit it says as such, even before the story of Yosef and his brothers, Ve'elo ha-malachim Hashem achu be'eretz Edom lifnei melach melech livnei Yisrael. These are the Torah gives us a whole list of all the kings of Esau that are in Edom, the very end of chapter 36, even before there was one king in Israel. And then the very next chapter opens up. Now you think we're going to go ahead and we're going to get, now it's Yaakov's turn. We're going to go ahead and see the dynasty that comes from Yaakov. Elu Toldot Yaakov. But that story gets cut off. That story gets stopped in its tracks. Why? Because Yosef bin Shvas Reshana hayaro et achav betzon. Vu na'ar et b'nei belav et b'nei zepa. What happened? Yosef and his brothers happened. Meaning, the story of Yaakov gets thrown away. This was supposed to be the end. This was a possible ending to the story of the Brit Ben Avatarim. But then there was an infighting between the brothers. Yosef is trying to take control over them. Right? Ro'et achav bitzon. He's not shepherding the sheep with his brothers. It doesn't say ro'et et atzon be'achav. It's ro'et achav. He's shepherding his brothers. Batson, he's using the tzon as a vehicle to take control over his brothers, Ro'at Achav. And this creates hate between the brothers. He uses this whole context of shepherding the brothers to bring back bad words to the father. Yisrael ahavid Yosef mikol banav. And therefore Yisrael now loves Yosef. Ki ben zekanim hu lo v'asal lo k'ton pasim. He gives him the k'ton pasim, a representation of the b'chor, of the firstborn. The brothers saw this injustice that father was choosing Yosef, and they could not now speak in peace. They couldn't get along. So there is no Toldot Yaakov now. Everything is thrown off. And now we have to go to Egypt. Why do we have to go to Egypt? Because we sold ourselves down to Egypt. It wasn't supposed to be like that. We sold ourselves down to Egypt. Yaakov has to follow, and we have to go through the whole Egypt process in order to fix the wrongdoings, the rift between the brothers. So we see the same idea that the Ramban mentioned in terms of Makom Hashem Yivchar Hashem, that there were alternative endings to this story, paths that could have been taken in terms of what the place of our capital was going to be, where the Beit HaMikdash was. And Rav Soloveitchik says the same thing here, alluding possibly what Rashi as well is saying, that Yaakov could have been the exile. That could have been the fulfillment of the Brit Hamilah, and that could have been the end of that whole chapter. There would not have been a Sefer Shemot the way that we know it. The third story is not shown in the splitting of the sea. This is a fascinating one. Because there's what we know, you know, there's what we imagine from the movies, you know, whether it be Prince of Egypt, the Ten Commandments, or whatever storybooks we're used to reading as kids. And there's what the text actually says. Right, so let's erase what we know. Let's erase, you know, let's erase the Ten Commandments. Let's erase Pixar. Let's erase all of those stuff. And let's look at what the text says. And let's put us into the sandals of Am Yisrael as they're leaving Egypt. So Paro lets the Jews go, but after a few days he says, nah, this was a really bad idea. Our whole economy is based on this. And he goes after them. Mitzrayim chases after them. He takes all 600 chariots strong. And they catch up to them while they're at the banks of the sea. They name Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael, they open their, they lift up their eyes, and they're shocked. Oh my God, Egypt is right behind us. They're fearful. This isn't like they know they're going to be, they are actually terrified. And they cry out, they cry out to Hashem. They complain to Moshe, there's no cemetery in Egypt. They think they're going to die. Moshe, you took us to the desert to die. Why don't you take us out here to die? This is what we told you was going to happen when we were in Egypt. We should have stayed in Egypt. We should have stayed there. We had a pension plan. We had, you know, it was fine. It was going to be good. Better to work there than to die here. Moshe says, do not fear. Stand by and witness the Yeshuat Hashem, the salvation, the deliverance that Hashem is going to give you. All right? For whom you see today, the Egyptians you see today, you will never see them again. Sounds like Moshe has things under control, right? Sounds like everything is good. Right? Moshe is now davening at Hashem, you know, God, I just had this great, you know, there's this really charismatic speech I just had, but like, God, what am I supposed to do? And Hashem says, what are you looking at me for? All right? Go. Ya'Allah, it's a green light. Go. Lift up your staff, Moshe. Lift it over the yam. And split it. And go through it. Right? So you read the text here, and it doesn't sound really that Am Yisrael or Moshe Rabbeinu really knew what was happening. Am Yisrael are freaking out. They think that there's going to be a total slaughter going on. Moshe Rabbeinu gives this very, you know, charismatic speech, calms them down. And then he turns the corner and he starts screaming out to God, I don't know what to do. And Hashem says, Moshe, pick up your staff and go. It sounds like Am Yisrael really had no idea that there was going to be a Kriyat Yam Suf. And the truth is, if you think that's radical, the Ramban says it. Rabbeinu Amru, Shayam Moshe Tzoek with Palal, Bahu Nachon. Moshe Rabbeinu was davening to Hashem. The Ramban is arguing with Ezra here, who thinks that it was Am Yisrael. No, that Moshe was davening. And that's true. Moshe Bahu Nachon, Ki lo yada ma yase. Moshe Rabbeinu had no idea what to do. Right? He was for a long time in Egypt, he got a script what to do, what to say, everything was going. He gets to the desert, he's like, uh-oh. Yeah, where's the next page on the script, right? Even though Hashem told him he's going to go ahead and harden the heart of Paro, he didn't know what was going to come after that. It was like to be continued. Asanero Dif Masig, he's on the border of the sea, and his enemies are coming after him. Hashem, please show me what to do. What do we do here? Okay, so we see from the text, and the Ramban asserts this as well, that Am Yisrael and Moshe Rabbeinu had no clue what was going to happen. They're at the water, and they're like, I don't know, maybe a boat will come. We have some weapons. Maybe we should fight. They really have no clue. This becomes problematic when you look at the Gemara's, the Midrash the Gemara brings regarding the Kriyat Yam Suf. It's a famous Midrash. I'm a little Rabbi Yehuda. Lo kachaya. There's a whole discussion in the Gemara exactly what went down while they're on the ocean. So Rabbi Yehuda says, no, you guys got it all wrong. Lo kachaya masa ela ze omer ani eina ni yorei tchila liyam ve ze omer. Yeah, okay. Everybody is saying, eina ni yorei tchila, I don't want to go first. You go into the water, right? Ve ze omer, eina ni yorei tchila, I'm not going, right? It's cold. Did you put your foot in there? I'm not going in. What happens? Kavatz Nachshon ben Aminadav vayered le'am tchila. So Nachshon says, all right, I'm going in. And Nachshon goes into the ocean, into the Yam. You know what happens after Nachshon goes in? Nothing. Nothing happens. He gets to his knee. He goes, all right, it's not so bad. This is the hard part. He goes a little lower to the, his waist. He goes, what happens? Nothing. Nachshon keeps on going. The water is above his nose. He's that far deep in the water, and nothing happens to the ocean. It's just sitting there. The Gemara continues. Moshe is on the other side of the rock, and he's davening. He's sweating bullets. He's davening to Hashem. And Hashem says, Moshe, I'm a lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Moshe, enough, stop. Yedidi tovim b'yam, my beloved is right, Nachshon, he's drowning in the ocean. You're here davening? What is this, Ne'ila? What are you doing? Amar lefanav, Rebono Sholom, Ma b'yadi laso, what am I supposed to do? What do you want me to do? Amar lo, Daber b'nei Yisrael v'yis'u, v'ata harim et matcha v'nata et yadcha. And Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, pick up your staff and go. Right, so here also you see from the second part of the Gemara, Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know that it was going to be a Kriyas Yam Suf. Hashem has to say, Moshe, pick up the staff, I'm going to make it happen. Me and you will work it out, go. Now here's the million-dollar question. It's a $64,000 question, if for those who remember. Why did Nachshon jump into the ocean? I mean, did Nachshon know something that we didn't? Moshe Rabbeinu didn't know it was going to split. All of Am Yisrael is like panicking. They don't know what's going to happen. And Nachshon's going for a swim. What did Nachshon think was going to happen? And it didn't happen, by the way. It didn't happen when he first walked in. It didn't split until Moshe, Hashem said, Moshe, Ya'ala. So why did Nachshon jump into the ocean? That is the $64,000 question. I'm going to suggest a theory. I haven't seen this theory outright in any Rishon, but this is my theory based on, if you see where this is going, based on our first two parts of this year. There didn't have to be a Kriyas Yam Suf. Meaning, Am Yisrael didn't know, and Moshe didn't know, because that wasn't necessarily what had to be. But Nachshon went ahead, and he took the initiative, and he said, this is how it's going to be. We're just going to walk right through it. Right? We can't go over it. We can't go under it. We've got to go right through it, says Nachshon. And he goes right into the water. And at that time, Hashem says, Yalla, Moshe, this is how it's going to be. Nachshon has spoken. We're going through the ocean. And he splits it. Right? But had Nachshon theoretically chosen a different route, right? Nachshon said, yeah, everybody, we got sticks, we got spears, we got stones, let's fight them. Hashem, there will be a salvation. If Nachshon went ahead and did that, it could have been, there would have been a war, just like we have at the end of the parasha with Amalek. And we could have won that war. Or I don't know, if Nachshon started flapping his arms, they could have flown over the Yam. I don't know. Maybe he would have clicked his heels together three times, said, there's no place like Canaan, there's no place like Canaan, there's no place like Canaan, and they would have ended up in Canaan. All right? Maybe that would have been easier. But Nachshon says, no, we're going right into the water. And Hashem says, I'm going to follow suit. So I haven't seen that explained explicitly anywhere, but Rabbeinu B'chaya says something not so far off. It's also a one-liner. Matitzok alai. Hashem says to Moshe Rabbeinu, Moshe, why are you screaming out to me? Says Rabbeinu B'chaya. And the Pshat, Milta alai koma. What does it mean, alai? Ein hadavar tali bi. Ela bi Yisrael. Moshe, why are you screaming to me? I'm waiting for you guys. Right? You guys do something, and I'll go ahead, and I'll act in return. This is a dance. Right? You want to bring the geula? Show me how it's going to happen. It's going to happen by going into the ocean? We'll make it happen that way. You want to fight? We'll fight. But matatzok alai, don't scream at me, because I'm waiting for you. What we have then, stop share. What we have then is we have three examples of where what we see is it's a destiny. Am Yisrael has a destiny, but it's a destiny of choice. The Mokom Asher Yivchar Hashem, the place that Hashem chooses, is the place, says the Ramban, that we chose. It didn't have to be Yerushalayim, but we made it Yerushalayim. According to Ral Salvatric's understanding of Rashi, right, the exile, the Brit Bein HaBetarim, could have been through Yaakov. That was a possible reality. Yaakov wasn't wrong, but we messed it up by having strife between us. And that caused another exile. And we had to go down to Egypt to fix it. And then we see the redemption of that when we actually come out of that exile. Hashem says, Matitzok alai. Nobody knows what's going to happen. The salvation isn't dependent on me. It's dependent on you. You guys are not just characters in this story. You're co-authors in the script. Bigadol, we're headed in a certain direction. There is a guiding line to this history, but there are many different routes it can happen. There are many different routes it can take. Try not to get too political here. I'm going to say this in a very sensitive manner, but I personally think it's hard to ignore what's going on in our generation. You know, there's many complaints of looking at, you know, what's going on in Israel. How could this be the geula? And by the way, in 48 and in the 50s, that was a very legitimate claim, okay? The secular Zionist, there is criticism is, you know, a much hakar zatov, but there's also plenty of criticism, okay? It was not an easy time. So a person could say, how could this be the geula? How could this be the geula? Hashem is going to bring the geula through people who are eating pork on Yom Kippur? That this is how it's going to be? This is the kind of state we're talking about? This is the time of Malchut? And you know what I think Hashem's response in the Shemayim is? Can be awful if I can say such a thing? Matetzok alai. What are you guys yelling at me for about this? If you want the geula to be different, if you want Eretz Yisrael to be different, so get up and do something about it. You guys are the ones in charge. You have the steering wheel here, right? And you can veer this ship in a different direction. And we see that happening. We see that happening. Now I think it's very powerful. Without pros, cons, pro Bennett, against Bennett, I just think it's amazing to see somebody who's as an American, right? Grew up, born and raised in America, to see somebody coming from there, making aliyah. And going ahead and making a difference, such a difference. There's an award that they give out. Nefesh B'Nefesh gives out an amazing award ceremony every year. It's emotional. Of Olim, Dafka Olim, people who made Aliyah, who made a difference in Eretz Yisrael. And you read the list and you see how much people can come and make a difference. Not just make a difference in terms of how this Geula is going to run out, right? That we are all Nachshon Ben Amindavs in our generation, right? Is it going to be a splitting of the sea? That's dependent on us, right? We're writing this story now. One of maybe the most important chapters of Jewish history is being written right now. Not just being played out, it's being written right now. And the question of what role we want to take, I'm sorry I got carried away in that. That was just an afterthought. But really, this Parshas Re'eh, Mokom Asher Yivchar Hashem, 16 times it appears in this parsha. This is the first time we have the mention of a Makom Asher Yivchar Hashem without knowing that it's Jerusalem. And we saw different opinions on it. With that, I will end my portion of the evening, and I will throw the mic back to Rabbi Jay.
I'm going to throw the mic back right back at you. There's really one question on the chat box. Please, anybody can unmute themselves and ask questions orally, or if you prefer, put in the chat box. Just you see from iPad, right, that after Shlomo, it got worse.
What do you mean?
Shiloh, any place Mishkan didn't serve. In other words, I assume. Okay, I'll let you speak. The Mikdash is a unifying place. What about the Mishkans before we built the Beit Hamikdash?
In terms of the being Makom Asher Yivchar?
I guess the Makom Asher Yivchar is you were saying how Yerushalayim should be the unifying force. We didn't know where it was going to be, so we wouldn't fight over it. Right, the third. What about on the Mishkan, Shiloh, Nov, Givon? You know
that. Well, that's the whole point. You just gave a whole list, right?
Right.
It wasn't a permanent place. We're renting out. We're renters, right? And tomorrow can change. But once you say no, this is it. It's Yerushalayim Adolam. So then that's the real estate. You know, jumps. If anybody knows real estate, right. Shiloh, I think you can get an apartment, a bigger apartment in Shiloh than you can in Yerushalayim today.
Yeah. All right. Okay. Anybody else? Any other questions? Yeah. Okay. All right. All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Yeah. Shikoh. Listen, lots to think about on why Yerushalayim is mentioned, of course, many more times later on, but in the Chumash, right, it's ignored. If we can as you point out. Okay. Tomorrow morning, my Perkei Avot here at 9:30 a.m. Next week, three of our Elul series will be starting, or three new series will be starting next week. Mark Shapiro is going to go back to his series, Great Rabbinic Figures, Great Rabbinic Thinkers, from Shaul Lieberman, Monday night at 8:30. Wednesday at 11 a.m., Benny Gesundheit is back after his 30-part series on Tehillim from finished before Pesach. He will be giving a 4-part series on the Machzor, beginning with Tfilat Chana. That will be on Wednesday. And Thursday, Ari Shvat is going to be starting a 5-part series on Orot HaTshuvah of Rav Kook. We have, of course, a regular shiurim next week, Daf Torah, the Parsha, Yirmiyahu, etc. Also next week, Rabbi Jaffe from Maimonides will be giving the Parsha Shir, and then the following week we'll be starting a few more of our Elul Shirim, Sefer Yonah, Tshuva, a couple of different classes on Tshuva. So we'll keep posted. Most of the things will be posted by this evening on the website, and we'll send out an email for registration. Okay, I think that's it. Okay, Rabbi Yasher Koach, thank you very much. If please God, we'll see you on Shabbos.
Thank you.
It's your turn to speak this Shabbos between Mincha Maariv, right?
Everybody's invited to Or HaChaim Minyan Mincha and Maariv for another shiur.
That's it. We have been taking turns in the last week speaking between Mincha Maariv. So I look forward to Rabbi Aviner's shiur. I don't know if he looks forward to my shiur, but that's a different story. Okay. Thank you. Laila Tov, everybody.
Yes, Kayach.
Thank you.